Okay, we're going to start here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Bet with the new Perek. Ve'elu migalchin b'moed. These are people who have permission to get a haircut, to shave on Chol HaMoed. Haba mebidinat hayam umebeit hashviya. Someone who came from overseas now returned on Chol HaMoed, so they didn't have the opportunity to get their haircut to take care of these matters prior to Yom Tov. Therefore, they're allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Same thing with Beit HaShviya. Someone who's in captivity is only released at the time that it's Chol HaMoed. That's his first opportunity to take care of these issues. The person is anus in the sense that they couldn't get this done before Yom Tov. Therefore, they have permission to do it on Chol HaMoed. Similarly, Hayotzei miBeit HaSurim, someone who is released from prison. Vaminudeh, Sheitiru lo Chachamim, someone who was in excommunication, who the Chachamim released at that point in time. Uchein mishin nishal chacham v'utar. Similarly, someone who goes to the Chacham to release themselves from a neder, and they get that release on Chol HaMoed. In those latter two cases, you have to assume that for whatever reason, it could only take place on Chol HaMoed. For whatever reason, he couldn't get the heter to release his neder prior to Yom Tov, either because the Chacham wasn't available, or he didn't have the petach, he couldn't figure out the reason why. Whatever the reason is, he only could do it on Chol HaMoed, and therefore beforehand he couldn't cut his hair. Now he could cut his hair. Same thing with the menudeh, the one who's in excommunication. He has to wait until Chol HaMoed, either because that's the only time that he could reconcile, or he did reconcile the issue, or because there's a possibility that there's a minimum time of nidui of 30 days, and that's when it expires during Chol HaMoed. But for whatever reason, that lands on Chol HaMoed. Now the next line in the Mishnah is V'nazir, V'ha mitzora ole mitumato l'taharato. So over here, most of the Rishonim read it, and this is Rashi in the Ktav Yad reads it this way, which is Hanazir, period. That's one category, which is a Nazir. A Nazir who finishes up his Nazirut on Chol HaMoed can cut his hair on Chol HaMoed, because that's the first time he has the opportunity to cut it. He has to bring his korbanot in order to finish off his nizirut. He has to cut his hair in that process. So that he's allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. Then there's a second statement, which is, HaMitzora ole mitumato l'taharato. A mitzora who goes from being tamei to tahor in the process of tahara. One of the things that the mitzora has to do is cut his hair, shave off his head. So that also is permissible if he reaches that point in time during Chol HaMoed. That's the way that most read it. The Rashi and Ketav Yad reads it that way as well. Rashi here on the Daf has a different version of this, and he reads it that Ole mitumato l'taharato modifies both of the previous two, which is both Nazir and Mitzora. Ole mitumato l'taharato. So Mitzora, we explained already. Mitzora, who's in the process of Tahara, that part of that process of Tahara is that he shaves his head. On the other hand, why Rashi over here says that the Nazir is also a case where he became Tomei, and now he's trying to restart his Nizirut. In order to restart his Nizirut, he has to cut his hair, he has to be Metaher himself, and then he can restart his Nizirut. So that's how he explains a Nazir over here, also being modified by Hule Mitumato L'Taharato. Question is why? Why did he do that? So there are different reasons brought. One reason possibly is because in the Torah, the only places we have the explicit necessity to shave one's head is by the Mitzora, who's Olea Mituma to L'Taharato, and same thing by a Nazir who is going from Tuma to Tahara, and then restarts his Nizirut. Over there, the Torah is explicit that he has to cut his hair in order to bring the Korbanot. A Nazir who finishes off his count of Nazir, and becomes Tahor at that point, meaning that he's released from the Nizirut at that time, the Torah does say that he should put the hair under the cooking of the Shlamim, but it's not as clear or explicit in the Torah that he has to cut his hair in order to bring his korbanot. So that may be one reason why Rashi favored explaining over here that it is a Nazir that's going from Tumah to Tahara. The other reason might relate to the fact that all the cases here in the Mishnah are cases where the person is in an unpredictable situation and they somehow are released from whatever that situation is on Chol HaMoed. Now, if you're talking about any of the items, it's understandable why someone who's traveling from overseas, released from prison, all these things where they're not certain about the outcome, and then all of a sudden they are released, so now they get the permissibility to cut their hair, do whatever they have to do. A Nazir Tahor, why is that something that is unpredictable? We know that Stam Nizirut is 30 days, or if he took it for a longer duration, then he could figure out the number of days, and he would know that it fell out in the middle of Chol HaMoed. So that means that when he's taking the Neder Nizirut, it's obvious that it's going to land during Chol HaMoed. So that's something that is not unpredictable, but rather something that is predictable. So by Rashi explaining that the case of Nazir is a case where the Nazir became Tamei, that makes it into an unpredictable case, because he didn't know he was going to become Tamei. He didn't know he was going to get suspended in the middle. So by doing that, it helps explain why the Nazir is relevant to the list over here. It's not just the Stam Nizirut, which just landed on Chol HaMoed. You don't just land on Chol HaMoed. You can calculate. If you took your Neder Nizirut on Purim or a couple days after Purim, you're going to land on Pesach. You know that for sure. So here was a case where he took the Neder Nizirut. He thought he'd be finished beforehand, but then he became Tamei. By becoming Tamei, all of a sudden that threw off the whole thing. And now he said he has to cut his hair in the middle of Chol HaMoed. Everything's a mess. So there's a case where it's unpredictable. Maybe that's why Rashi favored the interpretation that modifies both of them by Holdem Itumato, the Tarato. Ve'elu mechabsim b'moed. These are people who are allowed to launder on Chol HaMoed. So far we talked about Megalchim. These are both restrictions on Chol HaMoed. One may not cut their hair, shave on Chol HaMoed. And the other one is mechabsim. One may not launder on Chol HaMoed. But these are the exceptions to the rule. And here are individuals that can launder on Chol HaMoed. Abam Mimdinat Hayam. Same thing again. Someone who is coming from overseas and finally returns on Chol HaMoed. Umibet HaShivya. Someone who is coming out of captivity. Ve'yosemi Beit HaSarim. Someone who is released from prison. Umudda Shiyitiru Lo Chachamim. Again, someone who is excommunicated now is released from that excommunication. V'chei Minishin Nish'al HaChacham V'utar. Someone who took a neder and then gets released from that neder, Ayideh Chacham, Hatarat Nidarim. Now, the next part of the list is other things that are an exception to the rule of not laundering on Chol HaMoed. Metabchot Ayadayim, the hand towels. And then the next one is Metabchot. Here, there are three different ways to read this. One is Metabchot HaSaparim, which is the capes that the barbers put on the individual when they're cutting the hair for the hair to fall on to protect them from the hair, the capes that the modern-day barbers use as well to protect from the hair. So these are the metabchot ha-saparim. For those people that he's allowed to cut on Chol HaMoed, he's allowed to wash these so that they are clean, and then he can utilize them. That's one way to use it. The other way is metabchot ha-sofrim, which is the towels or the cloths that were used by the sofrim. Here, sofrim doesn't necessarily mean someone who's a sofer writing, but those that teach the children. So they use those to protect the ktav of the books that they're using. They place it underneath so it doesn't rub off, it doesn't become soiled by the oil from the candles and so on. So that might be metabchot sofrim. And the last possibility is metabchot ha-sfarim, which means the covers of the sfarim. So there, those are allowed to be laundered or washed because they're in use all the time. There's something that is in continuous use. You always cover over the Sefer Torah with these metabchot. If they become dirty, if they become soiled in any way, then you can wash them. You can take care of them. Umetabchot asapag. And these are towels that are used to dry off somebody from a zavin, zavot, nidot, vayodot. So these are all individuals who are tmeim. V'chol olim mituma l'tahara. I mean, so in this category, is anybody's going from tamei to tahor, and therefore their towels need to be washed because they've utilized them mitmei tuma, and now they want to be mitahir them, so they can be laundered. Harelu mutarim v'sharkul adam asurim. These individuals or these towels are allowed. Everything else is restricted. So our Mishnah listed out three groups of exceptions. One group of exceptions are those that can cut their hair on Chol HaMoed. Second group of exceptions, those can launder on Chol HaMoed. The third group is items that can be laundered on Chol HaMoed, because these are items that are in continuous use, something that is always in need of laundering, and that they're permanently in need of more laundering because they're used so frequently, and therefore they have permission to be laundered. Now, v'shar kol adam maitai masurim. Why is everybody else restricted from cutting their hair or laundering on Chol HaMoed? Kedetz nan. Like the Mishnah says in Ta'anit, Anshei Mishmar v'Anshei Ma'amad Asurim L'Saper U'L'Chabes. They are not allowed to cut their hair. They are not allowed to launder during their period of time. The Anshei Mishmar, the Kohanim that come up to serve in the Mikdash during their week. The Anshei Ma'amad, the representatives of Klal Yisrael that are present there for the Korbanot, to be the owners of the Korbanot, represent Klal Yisrael, and then they fast and they read from Maaseh Breshit, the whole program that we read about in Masechet Ta'anit. So they are not allowed to cut their hair or launder during that week. Ubechamishi mutarim mipnei kavod haShabbat. On Thursday, they're allowed to do it because of kavod haShabbat. So now, v'amar Rabba Bar Chana, amar Rabbi Elazar, my time. What is the reason that they're not allowed to launder or cut their hair during that period of time? Kedei shelo yikansu lemishmartan kashen minuvalim, in order that they don't enter into their mishmar when they are disgusting. Hachanami kedei shelo yikansu leregel kashen minuvalim. Same thing over here. We don't want people coming into the regio and then dealing with their issue. If we allow people to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed, instead of entering into the regio after having their hair cut and having presenting themselves in a beautiful manner for the Yom Tov, they'll end up to say, oh, you know what, I have some free time on Chol HaMoed, I'll get my hair cut on Chol HaMoed. So what end up being is that they'll have be disheveled, they'll not have the hair cut for Yom Tov, and then they'll get their hair cut in the middle of Chol HaMoed. So it's great for the Yom Tov Achron, but Yom Tov Rishon, they won't end up dealing with it. So to force people to deal with it before Yom Tov, we say, you don't have the ability to do it after the first days of Yom Tov. You don't have the ability to do it on Chol HaMoed. Same thing with kibbutz. Same thing with laundering. If we allow you to launder the clothes on Chol HaMoed, you're not going to launder them before Yom Tov. We want you to come with your clean clothing, with your best clothing into Yom Tov. So we tell you, no go on Chol HaMoed. You have to do it before Yom Tov. So that's why there's a restriction against laundering and cutting one's hair on Chol HaMoed, in order to facilitate the ability for people to do it beforehand, or force them to do it beforehand, because they won't have the opportunity to do it after Yom Tov comes. This is the famous heter that Rav Soloveitchik proposes with regards to shaving on Chol HaMoed, which is that a person who shaves on Erev Yom Tov, a person who's a clean-shaven individual, who would shave prior to Yom Tov, would still shave every day. I mean, just because you shaved before Yom Tov doesn't mean that you wouldn't shave on Chol HaMoed. It's a daily activity. So if you tell someone they can't shave during Chol HaMoed, it's not going to facilitate or precipitate them shaving before Yom Tov. They would shave before Yom Tov, and then they would shave again on Chol HaMoed because it's a daily activity. It's not something that you do once a week, once a month, and therefore you have to make a decision to do either before Yom Tov or on Chol HaMoed, but rather it's a daily activity. And so someone who shaves beforehand will also shave on Chol HaMoed. If you tell them they can't shave on Chol HaMoed, it's not going to make them want to shave anymore before Yom Tov, because they would shave there anyway, and they would shave again on Chol HaMoed. That's his head there, plus the issue of Tircha, that in their day, the undertaking of whether it was shaving or cutting one's hair was a big undertaking, and so therefore it was more involved. Today, where you can shave in 5 minutes, maybe it's not as much of a Tircha, it's not as much involved, and therefore there should be a heter to shave during the period of Chol HaMoed. The others want to argue for Erev Yom Tov Achron, that's Kvod Yom Tov Achron. That's a reason to be able to shave on Chol HaMoed, because otherwise you come in Menuval to Yom Tov Achron if you don't shave. So that's the Tzad of Soloveitchik's Chiddush, or heter, with regards to shaving on Chol HaMoed. Almost nobody accepts that Lo Locha. Everybody thinks that you still cannot shave. And speaking to some of the Puskim, Rav Shimon Eider, when I spoke to him about this, he said that he quoted a Chatam Sofer, a Tshuvat Chatam Sofer, with regards to Etrog. By the Tshuvat Chatam Sofer, they asked him, in Europe they had problems with procuring Etrogim. It's very difficult for them to get an Etrog. I mean, obviously in their climate they couldn't grow them, so they had to have them shipped. And when they shipped them over, there was like one Etrog for the entire community. And when the community used it, everybody in the community used the Etrog. By the time people got through with the etrog, it was brown, because there were so many people touching it and using it, that it was brown. So they wanted to know if the etrog no longer was mehudar, they couldn't use it, because the etrog turned brown from all the usage. So the Chatam Sofer there has a line, it says, nivula hi kvoda, that the nivul, the ruining of the etrog, is the kavod of the etrog. Meaning that the fact that it turned brown here from usage is the kavod of the etrog, that so many people want to utilize it. And he applied the same principle here with regards to Chol HaMoed as well, which is Nivula hi Kvoda. And in a sense that listening to the Chachamim and doing what they said and not shaving, even though that makes you into a slightly Menuval, Nivula hi Kvoda. That is the Kavod of Yom Tov, and the Kavod of Yom Tov Acharon is the fact that you didn't shave and that you listened to the Chachamim. Obviously that has more application when you're talking about things like the 3 weeks. And you're talking about the Omer, where people don't shave even for Shabbat or Kavod HaShabbat. There you can argue Nivulahi Kavoda, because the Churban HaBayit, remembering the Churban HaBayit, I mean Nuval over Churban HaBayit, or over whatever Avet Lut we are commemorating by the Omer. So that Nivula Yikvuda. By Chol HaMoed, it's a more difficult classification, although really the Gemara does not give a dispensation that would suggest that you could shave, but that is a way, or the other approach to this, to suggest that you cannot shave, even though people would shave before Yom Tov. There really is no dispensation on Chol HaMoed itself, and therefore they do not allow one to shave during Chol HaMoed. Now, by Rabbi Zero, Abdullah Aveda Erev HaRegel, person lost an object on Erev HaRegel, now he's looking for it. Kevin Danis, Mutar, since he was under duress, stress, coming into Yom Tov, and he didn't have time to get a haircut, therefore he is considered to be an anus, and he couldn't get his haircut, so maybe he should be allowed to get his haircut on Chol HaMoed. Odilma came into Lo Mucha Milchuta Lo, or maybe because it's not obvious. I mean, to outside parties looking in, they have no idea why this guy is getting a haircut on Chol HaMoed. There's nothing there that makes it obvious. Now, a person who comes back from a long journey, the boat comes, docks at the port, everybody knows about it, the person's released from prison, a person comes out of captivity, these are well-known items, and therefore a person getting a haircut, it's well-known why he's getting a haircut. Up here, that a person lost something on Erev Yom Tov, not everybody knows that, so it's not so obvious why he should be allowed to get a haircut. So those are the two tzadim. So Amar Abayi, so Abayi quotes something that we had in the Gemara Pesachim, Yomro kol asrikim asurim srikei baitus mutarim, so regards to the matzo. So here they used to make shapes or fancy types of matzo. The problem is that it took time to do that. If it took time to do that, it would rise and become a problem of chametz. So they said that the srikim are asurim. But Baitus, who was a professional baker, had forms, molds that he used in order to make these. So he was able to expedite the baking of these items. He's able to make the shapes quickly because he put them into the form, or he pushed the form on the dough. He had the formula, he could quickly bake them, so he didn't have a problem of chametz. So the Gemara says, what are you going to say? Abayi says there, the Gemara says, Yom Rukol HaSrikim Asurim, all shaped matzot are asur, srike baitos mutarim, and because baitos knows how to do it, they are mutar. We can't make that distinction. People are not going to understand the difference between these shaped matzos and those shaped matzos. We have to be consistent in our psak. And since you have to be consistent in our psak, the same thing here. We can't say that this guy can get a haircut because he lost his aveda, he's a noose. Nobody's going to understand why he's getting a haircut and other people cannot get a haircut. Mar says, li tameich, kama de rabba asiyam rabbi yochanan, kol mi shein lo elo chaluk echad. Someone only has one piece of clothing. He only has one tunic. Mutar lechabso b'chol HaShemoed. He's allowed to launder it on Chol HaShemoed because even if he laundered it on Erev Yom Tov, he has nothing else to wear. He needs to launder this item. So my says, Hatam Nami, why don't you say the same thing over there? Yomru, kol srikim asurim srike baitus mutarim. Why should he be allowed to launder? People are not going to understand why he's allowed to launder and nobody else is allowed to launder. Hait marla, no, there we do have a reason to allow her, to give the dispensation. Amamai Ravashi, ezoro machiach alav. I quoted this a number of times before, which is, his belt proves the point. What does it mean that his belt proves the point? So here there are different interpretations as to what it means, his belt proves the point. Either a person who has multiple clothing, or pairs of pants, you know, tunics, he has a belt that goes through the loops, and he puts it on. A person who has multiple sets of clothing, he takes the belt out of one, and he puts it into the next one. When he wears the first one, he wears it with the belt. Then, for instance, you have pants, and you wear a belt in it, you put the belt on. When you finish with these pants, you put them in the laundry, you take the belt off, and you put it on the next pair of pants that you wear the next day. So that person takes the belt out. Here, when he's laundering his tunic, the belt is inside the tunic. Since the belt's inside the tunic, why didn't he take the belt out? Because he has nothing else to put the belt into. So that's why it's obvious that this person only has one chaluk, because he left the belt inside of it when he's laundering it. So everybody will know that he only has one set of clothing, because he has the belt left inside of it. That's one way to learn it. The other way to say Zoro Machiach Alav is that a person normally who is laundering will put on his other set of clothing and then launder the first set of clothing. This individual has nothing to wear. He's going to be out there in his t-shirt, his undershirt, his underwear because he has nothing else to wear. The fact that he is a robe mechiyach alav means that he doesn't wear a belt because he has nothing to put around, the belt around. He doesn't have anything to wear. So when he's laundering, it's going to be obvious that he only has one cloak because that's only, he's laundering, he's not going to be wearing anything. So it's also be obvious. So for these types of reasons, it's going to be obvious that this person only has one set of clothing. Since he has one set of clothing, therefore, he's allowed to launder because everybody's going to know why he's laundering. He's laundering because he has nothing else. If he had something else, he wouldn't be in this predicament. He wouldn't be out there doing this. And therefore, it's obvious, or what's called muchiach alav. It's mucha milta. Everybody who sees him will know what the circumstance is. And therefore, you don't have to say, people get confused, they want to understand. They understand right away what the issue is. How many pairs of clothing you need in order not to be in this predicament? Tosafot says, suggests over here that two is enough. One for Yom Tov Rishon, one for Yom Tov Achron, and then you deal with in between. That you wouldn't be allowed to launder. That would be sufficient. And then Tosafot quotes the famous Heter with regards to children. The children, no matter how much clothing they have, you can't launder their clothing on a Chol HaMoed. We have that also by the 9 days, which is that children's clothing gets soiled on a continuous basis. And therefore, it's as if they only have one pair of clothing because they ruin everything so fast, they get it dirty. So that needs to be laundered on a continuous basis. You can't just assume because they have two pairs of clothing that's going to last them for the entire Pesach. Within a day, they'll soil both of those pairs of clothing and you can launder them. Rav Ashi Matni by Rabbi Zera, Uman Shu'uvdolo Aveda Erev Arego. What about a professional, a craftsman, that loses his Aveda on Erev Arego? Mahu, what's the din here? So what type of craftsman we're talking about here? We're talking about, for instance, a barber. A barber on Erev Yom Tov, where people come to the barber to get the haircut. All of a sudden, he's not available. Why is he not available? Because he's looking for something he's lost. So he came into Uman Umuchamilta, since he's a professional and a public professional, everybody knows that he's closed. Everybody knows that he wasn't there on Erev Yom Tov because he was looking for something. So therefore, he could cut his own hair on Chol HaMoed because he was anus on Erev Yom Tov. He's looking for something. Oh, Dilma came into Umuchamilta, Kihanach, lo. Or maybe because it's not so obvious like the others on a Mishnah where it's very clear, it's a public issue, everybody knows about it. Versus here where people went to get a haircut, knew about it, but not everybody knows about it. Maybe it's not enough. Teiku, there we leave it as an unresolved issue as to whether that's enough. Now, this is only good enough for the barber himself. People who need to get a haircut, and the barber, for whatever reason, lost something, and he couldn't give them a haircut on Erev Yom Tov, that does not give them the dispensation to get the haircut on Chol HaMoed. Even though, in a sense, they're anusim because they couldn't get the haircut, that's not enough of a reason. It's only the barber himself that we're asking about where he lost something. Is that enough to allow him to get the haircut on Chol HaMoed? But his customers do not get that dispensation. All right, Medina Tayam. We said here, someone who returns from overseas travel. Matnitan delok Rabbi Yehuda. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Datanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, Abba, Medina Tayam, lo yigaleach, mipnei shiatza, shelo birshut. Person who comes from overseas and wants to now shave, get a haircut, because he came back on Chol HaMoed, he cannot do so, mipnei shiatza, shelo birshut. He left without permission. What does that mean that he left without permission over here? Rishonim argue about this. Rashi here says that shelo birshut means that he left without permission because his trip resulted in him landing on Chol HaMoed. The fact that he planned a trip or he went on a long journey to land on Chol HaMoed, that is shelo birshut. You shouldn't have traveled in a situation and landed yourself coming back during Chol HaMoed. So that's what it means, shelo birshut. The Raivud, on the other hand, takes up another approach here. The other approach that connects this Gemara to other Gemarot, that's based on the Yerushalmi, which is that shelo birshut is that he left Eretz Yisrael. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to travel to Chutz La'aretz. And so shelo birshut over here was that he left without permission. He did something wrong. What did he do wrong? He left Eretz Yisrael. He left Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, which is not permitted. Since it's not permitted and he did something wrong, that's why he's penalized by not being allowed to cut his hair when he comes back on Chol HaMoed, because he did an Aveira. In his leaving, in his travels, he did an Aveira. By doing the Aveira, that's what causes, or that's what triggers this inability to cut his hair when he returns, because he left without permission. Literally. He wasn't supposed to leave. He did something wrong in the process. Or, the last possibility of explaining Shelo Bishult is what the Gemara is going to explain now. Shelo Bishult is, what was the reason that he went? Was the reason good enough reason for him to leave? And that's what the Gemara says here. Amar Abba, Lashut divrei hakol asur. To go out for pleasure, to go out for vacation, everybody agrees that is asur. So now, according to all the three different reasons, and according to the way Rashi explains here, is that he left and came back on Chol HaMoed, means that he planned a vacation that landed him back on Chol HaMoed. Everybody agrees there it's asur, because he didn't go out for a good reason. He went for vacation. Vacation is not a good enough reason to return in the middle of Chol HaMoed. Or, according to the Raivud, to leave on vacation from Eretz Yisrael is not a reason to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz. That's not a good enough reason. You're not allowed to do that. That's not one of the reasons you're permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael. That's one. Or, the last explanation here, Shelo Bershut, means that someone who goes on vacation, that's not a good enough reason to allow for the dispensation at all. Vacation is just not a good enough reason. Not because you did anything wrong, but just simply, that's just not a good enough reason to allow you to do this. Limizonot, on the other hand, someone who goes out for parnosa, divrei hakol mutar. Everybody agrees you are mutar. So again, in all these reasons, according to Rashi, to leave and come back on Chol HaMoed, if it's for your parnosa, that is a good enough reason to come back on Chol HaMoed, because otherwise the person doesn't have his wherewithal to pay for what he needs, to have Yom Tov, to have Chol HaMoed. Mizonot is a good enough reason to come back on Chol HaMoed. Or for the Raivut, it's a good enough reason to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz. Parnoso is one of the reasons you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz. Or, the last reasoning here is, that's a good enough reason to allow you the dispensation of cutting your hair. I mean, that if you left, even though you did nothing wrong necessarily, but by coming back on Chol HaMoed, and it was because of Parnoso, that's a good enough reason to allow you to cut your hair on Chol HaMoed. Lo nechleku al harvicha. The machlok between them is an arvacha, which is the case that we've discussed all along here, which is, everybody's clear when it comes to hefsed, when it comes to loss, that you're allowed to go. Parnosa, if this is basic parnosa, everybody agrees about it. Everybody agrees that if it's simply for your benefit, you know, bonus, whatever it is, everybody agrees there that you can't do it. Vacation, so on and so forth, that's not allowed. The question always comes up is harvacha. Harvacha is extra profit, opportunity cost, more to earn more. It's a person who has wherewithal, and now he wants to earn more. Is he allowed to leave for that reason? That's marmidami le kashot. Rabbi Huda compares that to vacationing, and therefore he says you cannot do it. Marmidami le kamizonot. And then the Chachamim say that's like making a parnosa. Making more parnosa is the same as making your basic parnosa. So the way that Rashi describes it over here is larvicha sheish lo nechasim arbei. He has plenty of assets, and therefore he doesn't have to go out. What that threshold is not clear. The Taz, you're talking about this in a different context, the context of Dovar Aved on Chol HaMoed, says about Harvacha that a person who has Nechasim Arbe is someone who's so wealthy that it really doesn't matter to them. For anybody else who's not so wealthy, that doesn't matter. Just because they have some assets, just because they have some money, doesn't mean that going out to make a little more Parnosa is considered to be Harvacha. Because if they don't do it now, they're going to have to keep doing it. I mean, that Parnosa just doesn't come around all the time. So you have the opportunity to get parnosa, you got to go at that point in time. So what that threshold is for someone between parnosa versus harvacha, it's not a clearly delineated line. Depends what you really think is basic parnosa versus what you think is harvacha. There are others who believe that as long as he has enough to survive now through the Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed, that's enough. Harvacha is in excess of that. So that would be the threshold for them. Again, the Taz sets the bar very high for what is considered to be nechasim harbei, so that he doesn't have a din of parnosa, but rather of harvacha. So here is a machloket between them as to when we have harvacha. Is that considered like vacationing? Is that considered like parnosa? And is it permitted then to come back on Chol HaMoed? For the Raivud, that's also a question of whether you're permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz Laretz. That would be the basic question. For harvacha, are you allowed to leave? Parnosa, you're allowed. Harvacha, questionable according to this. Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So meitevet, Amar Rabbi, nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda, b'shiyatza shelo birshut. I think Rabbi Yehuda's position makes more sense when he left without permission. Divrei Chachamim shiyatza birshut. And the Chachamim makes more sense when he left with permission. So mai shelo birshut. What does it mean that he went out without permission? Ilei melashut means we went out for vacationing. V'amar divrei hakol asur. According to Rava, you just said before, everybody agrees by vacation that you can't. It's asur. Ela mizonot. If you want to say we're talking about mizonot, amar divrei hakol mutar. Ela pshita laharvicha. It's talking about harvacha. So Mar says, okay, so now you've explained it, that the question here, according to Rabbi, is nirim divrei Rabbi Yehuda shiyatza shelo birshut, divrei Chachamim shiyatza birshut. So now what are we talking about? We're talking about harvacha. Then Mar says, eima seifa. Then what are you going to say about this latter half of Rabbi Yehuda's statement, which is, nirim divrei Chachamim shiyatza birshut. My birshut. Again, how are you going to define birshut over here? Ilayim elamizono tarmar divrei kol mutar. Rabbi said, everybody thinks that's mutar. Velalar, what is it? Ilayim elamizono tarmar divrei kol mutar. So then, elalar vicha. Didn't you just say that he says that nirin divrei Rabbi Yehuda shelo birshut is a case of harvacha? So if that's v'ha achi kamar, so then you're saying the same thing. So what ends up happening here is you run into a problem with Rabbi's statement. Rabbi's statement is, I like the Rabbi Yehuda here and I like the Chachamim here. Rabbi Yehuda when it's shelo birshut, Chachamim birshut. Which seems to imply that they argue across the board. That there is no agreement between them. And Rabbi's coming along to say that, Shelo Bershut, I like Rabbi Yehuda, Bershut, I like the Chachamim. Implying that they argue in both of those situations. So Gemara says, oh, well, you're going to explain that they're both talking about harvacha, and that's what they're arguing, but then Rabbi Yehuda's statement internally doesn't make sense. He's saying in one case, I paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, in one case, I paskin like Chachamim. I'm talking about harvacha in both of them. How can he paskin like both of them? So Gemara says, hochi kamar. This is what it means. Nirin divri Rabbi Yehuda l'rabbonon. It's not Rabbi speaking about the psak halacha here, but rather he's giving you a definition to their machloket. He's not giving you a psak halacha like Rabbi Yehuda, like the rabbonon in these cases, but rather he's saying this. Nearing the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbonon. The Rabbonon agree with Rabbi Yehuda's position, when he goes out without permission. When he goes out for a vacation, they agree with Rabbi Yehuda's position that you cannot cut your hair. Mind you, what's that? Lashut. Shafilu chachamim lo nechlu gualav el aravicha. Because they only argue in a case where it's for extra profit. Aval lashut, when it comes to vacationing, modile. Venirin dire Rabbonon the Rabbi Yehuda. Not that Aloch is like the Rabbonon, but rather, the Rabbonon's position makes sense to Rabbi Yehuda, kshiyatza birshut. When he goes out with permission, what's permission? My niu lemizonot. When he goes out for basic parnosa, shafila Rabbi Yehuda lo nechlak aleihem el arvicha. Because Rabbi Yehuda only argues on the chachamim when it comes to a case of harvacha. Now, in this explanation of lemizonot for parnosa modulu, he agrees with them. So now, the way that we explain Rabbi here, we have no indication of what the psak halacha is anymore. Before, you thought Rabbi was giving us indication as to the psak halacha, and now we're saying no. It's nothing to do with the psak halacha. Rabbi's position simply explained to us the framework of the machloket. Saying, Rabbi agrees to the Chachamim with regards to Mizonot, and the Chachamim agree with Rabbi with the case of vacation. Their argument's about Havacha. What's the Halacha? We don't have any Psak Halacha here anymore. Chokat Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda with regards to that manner of Havacha. Whether that's permitted or not permitted. We dealt with this topic in other places about permissibility of leaving Eretz Yisrael, and why there might be Heterim, or what are the Heterim for leaving Eretz Yisrael. I just mentioned the Raiva, because the Raiva brings that Sugyo over to here. And equates the two sugyot. Other Rishonim don't see the equation here. They see this sugya as being independent. This sugya is about Chol HaMoed, leaving and returning at Chol HaMoed. That's a sugya about Eretz Yisrael. Maybe they have the same definition. Maybe the same things apply. Maybe not. But the other Rishonim deal with the other in different ways. And we talked about there other heterim or reasons why you might have heterim to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz, even possibly for vacation reasons. But that's a separate topic. I just wanted to mention the Raivud, because the Raivud connects the two sugyot. Amar Shmuel, Katana Nolad B'Moed. A youngster that's born on Chol HaMoed. Mutar Legaleach B'Moed. He can get a haircut on Chol HaMoed. She'enecha Beit HaSirim Gadol Mizeh. You don't have any more Beit HaSirim greater than being in his mother's womb. There's no way to cut the hair beforehand. So therefore you'll have to cut it on Chol HaMoed. Obviously it's talking about a child who's born with whatever type of hair. Whether that's the fuzzy hair that falls off later on, or something that's impeding his ability to function. So they want to cut the hair. For whatever reason, they need to cut the hair of this baby. It's probably a more unusual case, but it's a case where possibly they needed to cut it. You can do it because he was Beit HaSirim. The Gemara says, Moed in Mikar Alo. The only case is a case where he's born on Chol HaMoed. If he was born before Yom Tov, and then all of a sudden on Chol HaMoed he needs to cut his hair, we don't let you do it because they could have done it prior to Yom Tov. Right. If it's a case where it wasn't plausible beforehand because it didn't grow, then obviously whatever happened now. I mean, we will expect you to anticipate these types of problems, and we would like you to take care of them beforehand. So anticipation is part of the reason that you have to deal with it. Alright. Meiti Rav Pinchas. Kol elu shamru mutar legaleach m'moed, mutar legaleach m'mevlo. Anybody who's allowed to cut their hair, shave, and chol HaMoed for the dispensations mentioned in our Mishnah, the same is applicable by an avel. Someone who's an avel, and his avelu turns out in a situation like mentioned in our Mishnah, then he also has a dispensation to cut his hair during his avelu because of the unanticipated nature of the situation in which he finds himself. So the Mara says, ha, asur legoleach b'moed, asur legoleach b'me'avlo. That means that someone who is not allowed to shave during Chol HaMoed also is not allowed to shave during their avelu period. Now, v'yamar t'katan itbe plukto, if you say by a katan, we make such a distinction, which is that if the katan is born on Chol HaMoed, you can cut his hair on Chol HaMoed. If he's born before Chol HaMoed, means born before Yom Tov, then you would not allow to be cutting his hair on Chol HaMoed. You should have cut it beforehand. That means that a katan that ends up in a case of avelut, meaning that he was already available to cut his hair prior to avelut, and now he enters into a period of avelut, he would not be allowed to cut his hair. That implies that a katan is noheg avelut. Nimtzeit avelut noheged bekatan. The conclusion from this is that a katan now is engaged in the process of avelut. Vehatanya, we have a braita, mikarin the katan mipnei agma nefesh. we rent the garments of a katan, not because there's a chiyuv avelut on the katan, but rather mipnei agmat nefesh, to instill, to precipitate certain feelings about the mate. And as Rashi says here, mipnei agmat nefesh yivku aroim, people who see the child with the rent garments, hirbu with kvod amet, and that will cause them to increase the kvod amet. This will trigger within individuals a feeling of being upset over the loss of this individual. So we make the katan rip their clothing or rent their garments, not because they are chayav in avelut, but simply to engender a certain feeling amongst other people. So you see that there is no din of a velut with regards to katan. Yet, the way you're explaining it now, because of the equation between Chol HaMoed and avelut, you're suggesting now that a katan is involved in avelut. So Rav Ashi says that the equation is not exact. It doesn't say miktani ha'asurin. There's no implication. All the din says is if you have a heter on Chol HaMoed, you also have a heter on avelut. We then inferred from that, if it was Asur on Chol HaMoed, it's also Asur on Avelut. That's not the statement made by the Gemara. The statement of the Gemara is, if it's Mutar on Chol HaMoed, it's Mutar on Avelut. Our inference from that, which was, if it's Asur, it's Asur, that's not written. And that's what Rav Ashi says. Mik tani ha Asurin, Dilma Yeshmein Asur v'Yeshmein Mutar. It might be that when you cannot cut on Chol HaMoed, as far as Avelut is concerned, some of them are Mutar, some of them are Asur. There's no guidance with regards to that. The only guidance it gives us is when it's Mutar, it's Mutar. But you can't say anything about Asur over there, and therefore you can't come to this conclusion. They change, they amend the statement of Shmuel, and therefore it becomes less problematic, which is Amar Shmuel. Katan mutar legalcho memoed. Lo shna nolad bemoed, lo shna nolad meikara. A katan can cut his hair, whether he was born before Yom Tov, whether he was born on Chol HaMoed itself, he's allowed to cut his hair no matter what. Then you have now a proof. Amar Pinchas Afanan Nami Tanina. This bright that now becomes a proof to this. What? Kolelu Shamru Mutada Galeach Moed Mutada Galeach Bimeyav Lo. Anybody who can get a haircut on Chol HaMoed also can get a haircut when they are in Avel. Ha Asurim LeGaleach. If they're not permitted to cut on Chol HaMoed, Asurim LeGaleach Bimeyav Lo. See, Amar Katan Asur Nimsei Daved Lo Neeg BeKatan. If you say a Katan's Asur, then Avelut would be applicable by Katan. Katanya Mekarim LeKatan Mipnei Agmat Nefesh. We only rip because of a feelings that are engendered by that, not because the katan has to rip their clothing. So therefore now it becomes a proof to us, which is, since the katan is mutar on Chol HaMoed, whether he's born before or not, that means he's never asur on Chol HaMoed. If he's never asur on Chol HaMoed, means he'll never be asur by avelut in terms of cutting his hair. Basically, the conclusion is, no avelut by a katan, which is exactly what we want the conclusion to be. And Rav Ashi says, the bright is not a proof. Miktane asurim, dilma yeshmen asur, yeshmen mutar. The possibility is that we can't make the inference. It's true by heter. When you say it's mutar, then it's mutar, but it's not necessarily true. When you say it's asur, then it's asur. And since the equation is not exact, you can't prove anything here from the katan. Whether the katan is mutar or not mutar, you can't prove anything to it regards to his din by avelut. And therefore, it's not a proof from here. In terms of the question of the Gemara, you can see there's a Rabbi Akiva Eiger on the first line of the Gemara here. The question of the Gemara is very difficult. The whole process of the Gemara is very difficult. As Rabbi Akiva points out, he says, "Kashli, had the rabba given the katan lo shayach avelut, ein ze yotzei min haklal." He says, first of all, since the katan is not relevant by avelut, this is not an exception to the rule. The rule is like this. The rule says, Chol HaMoed and avelut. So now, if someone is not relevant to the category of avelut, then he's not an exception to the rule because he doesn't have avelut. If he doesn't have avelut,
there is no rule.
Right, there is no rule. He's not part of the rule because he's not an avel. An avel is governed by the rule here. The katan is not an avel, so he's not governed by the rule. So that's the first thing he asks. The second thing he asks is that the katan here is not cutting his own hair. There's an adult that's cutting his hair. The katan is the one that has the restriction on him, yet we're talking about an adult that's cutting his hair. So he says, "Umayd enu isur la katan, rak ala migaleach. Aval abavel amigaleach enu avel, va katan laka isur." He says that there's a big difference. And Chol HaMoed, what's the problem with cutting the katan's hair? The katan himself is not governed by that because he's a katan. So who is he restricted from cutting his hair? The adult. So the adult is restricted because he's also asur in melacha on Chol HaMoed. Comes to avelut, what's the din? So the katan isn't an avel, so he can't cut his hair. The adult that comes to cut his hair isn't an avel either. There's some independent party that's coming to cut his hair. So why should he be restricted in cutting the hair of the katan at that point in time? So again, he says, I don't see the equation. And he says, Tzarchion Godol on this Gemara, because the equation seems very precarious. Because the Katan is, number one, not an Avel. It's not an Avel, the equation doesn't exist for him, number one. And number two is, even if you want to say the equation exists, the restriction is on the adult cutting the Katan's hair. By Chol HaMoed, there's a reason to believe the adult is Asur. By Avelut, there's no reason for the adult to be Asur, because the adult is not an Avel. Everybody has the din of Chol HaMoed, not everybody is an Avel. And so the equation breaks down again in that situation. So just to point out that Rabbi Akiva Eger says that the Gemara here is a very difficult Gemara because of that issue. But now the Gemara continues and says, Avel einenu eig aviluto beregel. An Avel does not conduct himself as an Avel on Yom Tov, on the regel. Shnemar v'samachta b'chagecha. One must be happy during their chag. So now, what are the options? I avelu dumi karahu. If you suggest that he was already an Avel prior to Yom Tov, prior to Chol HaMoed, Ati Asei Derabim V'Dochi Asei D'Yachid, then the Asei of the public, which is V'Samachta B'Chagecha, comes and overrides the Asei of the Yachid, the obligation of the Yachid to have Avilut over here. Rashi over here quotes the Pasuk, Avel Dichtiv, Avel Yachid Asilach. He quotes the Pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Rashi in the Ktav Yad, which is the real Rashi here on Moed Katan, quotes the Pasuk from Yechezkel of Hanegdom, that you have to keep yourself a Yachid and remain silent. The Avelut that is experienced by Yechezkel, where he does everything the opposite of what he's supposed to do by Avelut, and that's how we learn some of the Dinei Avelut. So he quotes the Pasuk from Yechezkel about this. So he says, the Asei of Rabim, the Asei obligation of the public to all be happy on the Regel, overrides the obligation of the individual to be an Avel at this time. Via Avelut Hashto, if he becomes an Avel on Yom Tov itself, or on Chol HaMoed itself. So there, lo ati asei di achi v'dachi asei di rabim. His asei of the individual will not come and override the pre-existing asei di rabim to be happy. So now this is an interesting Gemara, because this Gemara precipitates the major machloket between the Rishonim and Tosafot already is dealing with this. And it says over here, it says that, you can look in the first line, the first Tosafot on the page, he says, asei di achi, mashma, Avelut ika asei doraita. It sounds like avelut is an obligation mina Torah. So what is the Gemara saying? Gemara here doesn't say, you know why you have to keep the simcha on the holiday and not avelut? Be very simple. Samachta bechagecha is doraita. Avelut is only de rabbonon. Doraita overrides de rabbonon. That's the reason you have to be happy. That's why there's no avelut on the moed. That's not what the Gemara says. Gemara says, asei de rabim overrides asei de achin. Making a parity between the Simchat HaRegel and the Avelut. Tosfot says from that, it sounds like the Asei of Avelut is Doraita, is Minatorah, just like the Asei of the Regel. And that's why the Regel overrides the Asei the Yachid, because one is Rabim, one is Yachid, and that's why it overrides over here. Asei the Rabim overrides the Asei the Yachid, but they're both Doraita, meaning Avelut is Midoraita. Tosfot then rejects that and says, maybe not. Maybe the equation can be this way. Maybe Simchat HaRegel today is only Midrabonon. Why? What's the real Simchat HaRegel? Gemara Mesachim says the Korbanot Shlamim that you bring, the Achilat Basar Shlamim, is the real Simchat HaRegel. So today we don't have Simchat HaRegel Doraita. We only have Simchat HaRegel Dirabonon. So what's the competition here? Asei Dirabim, which is the Asei Dirabonon of Simchat HaRegel, against the Asei Diyachid of Avelut, which is also only Dirabanan. So it's a Dirabanan competing with the Dirabanan, and therefore the Rabim overrides the Yachid. That is the Shita of the Tosafot. This really is one of the major pivots in terms of the Machloket HaRishonim as to whether Avelut is Midoraita or is Avelut Midrabanan. It's a major Machloket already in the time of the Gaonim, leading into the Rishonim, and the different approaches as to whether Avelut has a Din Minatorah or a Din Midrabanan. I mentioned in passing in the introduction to the Masechta, with regards to Melacha and Chol HaMoed, we have a Machloket there. We also have a machloket here by Avelut, whether it's Doraita or Dirabanan. The Gemara itself is unclear about it. The Gemara itself, we saw already, back on Daf Yud Aleph, makes it sound like Avelut is Dirabanan. It says, Chol HaMoed is Doraita, Avelut is Dirabanan. There it makes it sound like it's Dirabanan. But we have other cases where the Gemara later on in Daf Chof is going to bring a proof from a Pasuk as to how we know that Avelut is Min HaTorah, and brings a proof from a Pasuk, Achritaki Omar. So we have other cases where it seemingly it is Min HaTorah, that Avelut is Min HaTorah. The Gemara never addresses it head on. It has, we have different locations in the Gemara which suggest different things. Sometimes it suggests that it's the Rabbanon, sometimes it suggests that it's the Oraita. It's not clear. The Gaonim themselves never deal with the question again in an abstract form. Is it d'oraita d'rabbanan? They simply deal with psak halacha. The major psak halacha, something that we'll get to later in the Masechta, is what happens on the last day, the eighth day of Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz, which is only a din d'rabbanan, is avelut override in that case. So the Gaonim in that case say, well, if avelut's d'oraita, it's going to override because that day is only d'rabbanan. So that's where they deal with it. And most of the Gaonim believe that avelut Yom Rishon is d'oraita. Now, again, in the Rishonim is the first time we start to see this question asked in the abstract form is, just the basic form, is avelut d'oraita or d'rabbanan? That's the first time people just ask the question straight out. In that case, we have differences of opinions. There's really two major schools of thought, and I'll give you the exceptions to the rule, which is, the Rif quotes a daya that he seems from the Gaonim. It is found in the Shi'utot, the Shi'utot of the Rav Chai Gaon, quotes something like this, that there's 7 days of Avelut are all d'oraita. All 7 days of Avelut are d'oraita. And the source they bring is from Yaakov Avinu. That is Noeg Evel Shivat Yamim. That it says there by Yaakov Avinu, they kept an Evel for 7 days. So he says there that it's 7 days is d'oraita. He quotes such a shita, but nobody really brings that down. The halacha doesn't become a mainstream. That's one extreme shita. There's another shita, which is the shita of Arayvud, which is also another extreme form, which is that not only does he think, according to Ramban, he thinks Shiva is also d'oraita, meaning that the first day of Avelut is d'oraita, he thinks that Shloshim is d'oraita. Arayvud says that laundering and cutting one's hair, which are the items that are found by Aaron and his children when Nadav and Avihu pass away, those items are referencing 30 days, and there's a good reason to believe why those are issues of 30 days, because those are things that happen not on a daily basis, but things that happen on a cycle of 30 days. Nobody gets a haircut every day. People get haircuts over that period of time. So he thinks Shloshim's d'oraita. He's another exceptional opinion that we don't really hold like. The two major opinions, which are the opinion basically of the Gaonim and the Rishonim, like the Rambam and the Rishonei Sfarad, which is that Yom Rishon is d'oraita. The first day of Avelut is d'oraita. The remaining days are d'rabbanan. The other shita is the Balei HaTosafot, who believe that all 7 days of d'rabbanan, there is no Avelut d'oraita whatsoever. Why does this problem arise? Why is it so difficult? The likelihood is because Avelut is a natural emotion. It's a natural outcome of someone losing a close relative, is the feelings that are precipitated by the loss of that individual. It's something that in the Torah, in Tanakh, is mentioned not only by Jews, but also by non-Jews. Avelut is not something uniquely Jewish. Mourning is a human emotion. It's a human part of the human experience. And so for that reason, it's unclear whether the Torah really addresses Avelut or not. I mean that we have frameworks for Avelut or mentions of types of Nihugei Avelut, but the Torah itself never explicitly tells you you have to be an Avel. Why not? Because it's natural. Everybody becomes an Avel even without being told to be an Avel. So that's why it's not clear why the Torah doesn't give you an explicit statement, yet people still believe that the Torah thinks that Avelut is d'oraita. The Geonim and the Rishonim that think that it is d'oraita basically quote Psukim where we do find the Torah addresses issues. That's by Onein. By Aninut, the Torah is explicit about the requirements that an Onein may not do certain things. Now, generally, the Onein and in the Torah, an Onein can't participate in Kodoshim. Can't participate in Maaser Sheni. That's where Onein is mentioned. And that's even in Mishnayot in general. There's almost no Mishnayot that mention Onein outside the context of Kodashim. He's not allowed to, Kodashim requires Simcha. Maaser Sheni requires Simcha. And Onein lacks the Simcha. Therefore, he cannot participate. That's clearly Min HaTorah. Mishnayot also echo that. The one Mishnah is Mishnah in Sanhedrin with regards to Avelut for a person that's put to death by a Beit Din, is there Avelut for them? So the Gemara there says, no Avelut, but there is Aninut, because Aninut should believe. Aninut is something that happens. It's a feeling. You can't tell someone, don't feel. They feel. Aninut is a natural feeling. So what ends up happening here is that they take the Pasuk, whatever Pasuk it is that they're bringing, whether it's Achritak, Yomar, or they bring the Pesukim by Aaron Uvanah, by Nadav and Avihu, that speak about Aunein, and they apply that to the first day of Avelut. So they have Aninut, extended to Avelut, and that's how they get the first day to be d'oraita. Balei HaTosafot to come up with a different approach. As opposed to the Gaonim and Rishonim are looking for a pasuk as a proof for why it's d'oraita. They all find a pasuk that here or there that shows that it's d'oraita. The Balei HaTosafot just look at the Piskei Halacha and the Gemara. The Gemara says, by Hilchot Avel, that whenever you have a question about Hilchot Avel, it's the Kula. Why is it always the Kula? Right? That's what the Baal HaTosfot would answer. Baal HaTosfot would say, look at the Pesukei Halacha. All the Pesukei Halacha are the Kula. It's because it's always a Safek D'Rabbanan. It's a Safek D'Rabbanan. You always go to Kula. So they say, look, it's for sure, based on the Pesukei Halacha that are in the Gemara, it's pretty clear that it's D'Rabbanan, because every time we have a Safek, we go to Kula. Why would you do that? By Eruv, we have the same din. By Eruv, we always pass in the Kula because it's D'Rabbanan. If that's the din by Avelut, we're passing the Kula, is because, must be, it's D'Rabbanan. So that's the Shita of the Baal HaTosafot. I mentioned this again by Melechet Kol HaMoed. The Ramban had an interesting Shita there. He also has an interesting Shita here by Avelut. Again, the Ramban is unusual because he has both the ability, he's one of the later Rishonim, so he has the ability to see what everybody said before him. Usually people of his era are what we call Malaktim. They just gather together the previous opinions. But the Ramban does both. Ramban knows what everybody else says, but he's also a tremendous Chadshan. And he is Mechadesh himself. He's like on the par with the Baal HaTosfot, the Rabbeinu Tam, the Rit. He's on that level of being able to be Mechadesh. So that's what he does over here. He basically takes all the opinions and rejects them. He rejects the Baal HaTosfot. He says, that just can't be. And he brings proofs to the fact that it's not always the Kula. And there are times where it seems like Avelut is D'Oraita. He also questions the position of the Gonim. He says, I don't understand the Gonim. They are bringing the proof that Avelut is D'Oraita from Aninut. Onin and Avelut are two different things. How is it that they're bringing a proof from Aninut to Avelut? And that raises an issue. I heard this from Rav Meir Lichtenstein, and he points out that there are really three time periods after the death of an individual through Avelut. There's what's called Meto Mutal Lefanaf, when the person is there, the mate is still there. There's Onin, a period of Aninut, and then there's a period of Avelut. These are three discrete periods of time, but they're not so discrete because they overlap. The period of time Meitu Mutal Lefanav overlaps with Aninut. Aninut overlaps with Avelut, and they have overlaps between them. The question is, for all the Rishonim, is where do you put the line that divides? So what's clear is, from most of the Rishonim, like the Gonim, that are saying that Avelut is D'Oraita, they basically say Meitu Mutal Lefanav is a cutoff line. Aninut and Avelut are on the other side of that line. So then, for them, Aninut and Avelut are the same. It says, Aninut Avelut Sirim. Rabban says, what do you mean? Aninut Avelut have nothing to do with each other. Why should they be the same? Why is she able to prove Aninut Avelut? So the Ramban clearly says, Aninut's a line, and then Avelut comes afterwards. It's a separate entity. The one who has the most trouble is the Rambam, because the Rambam, who says that we learn it out of Aninut, yet he says Avelut only starts from Nistama Golel. Once the grave is sealed up, that's when Avelut starts. So for him, Avelut starts after Aninut, yet he proves that Avelut Yom Rishon is D'Oraita from Aninut. So it's very difficult for the Rambam. The Ramban comes up with the Chiddush, and he says this. He says that, truthfully, Avelut begins right away. He says Avelut begins from the moment the person dies. Yet, why don't we practice Avelut? Because of Meitu Mutal Lefanav. Meitu Mutal Lefanav is the Gemara in Brachot, which tells us that when you have Meitu Mutal Lefanav, you're potter from a mitzvot. Why are you potter from the mitzvot in that kind? Potter me Kriyat Shema, potter me Shmon Esrei. Why are you potter from a mitzvot? It's because you need to be metapel with the mate. So what, the dine avelut are suspended at that time. You are an avel, but they're suspended because of meto mutal lefanav. Once you've cleared meto mutal lefanav, then the avelut kicks in. And that's why he says that overlap between aninut and avelut creates the din d'oraita, is because avelut is working in tandem with aninut. They're not separate, they're there. But just at the time of aninut, there's sometimes meto mutal lefanav, which causes a suspension of the dine avelut. And then the Ramban says something similar that he does by Chol HaMoed, Melechet Chol HaMoed, is some of them are D'Oraita and some of them are D'Rabbanan. And he basically says by Avelut that what is D'Oraita is anything that is Simcha. You're not allowed to be happy when you're an Avel. So being an Onain, being an Avel means don't be happy. So anything that would be happiness, those items are D'Oraita. The Torah says don't be happy. You have to be Avel, you have to be upset. That is the Din D'Oraita. The Din D'Rabbanan are all the Nihugim that are about being unhappy. Rending one's garments, acting like not washing, taking off one's shoes. Those are all simanim that a person is be'avelut. Those are indications he's in avelut. Those are things that are showing he's upset. Things that help maybe to facilitate him being upset. But those are not D'Oraita, those are all D'Rabbanan. He says, if you look carefully, when the Gemara says that we pass in the kula by avelut, it's all by those items. It's all those items that are D'Rabbanan. Not in the items that are D'Oraita of not participating in Simcha. So the Ramban again here is Mechadesh, like he did by Melechet Chol HaMoed, that there's certain Melechot in Chol HaMoed that are D'Oraita, certain of them that are only D'Rabbanan. And that's the explains the inconsistency in the Gemara. He does the same thing here by Avelut. says some of them are Doraita, some are Derabanan, and that's how he explains the inconsistency in the Gemara. That just gives you a broad overview of the different shito with regards to whether it's Doraita or Derabanan. The Tosafot over here brings up both shitot with regards to how this is working. Why is the Asei Derabim overriding the Asei Derachid? Is it because it's Doraita, Doraita? Or is it Derabanan, Derabanan? And that will depend on what you think your opinion is with regards to Avelut. Right, Gemara says now, Minudeh, Maushin Hog Niduyah Beregel. Someone who's in excommunication, does he have his Nidui during the Regel? Because a Nidui is similar to an Avel, we just said now the Avel is suspended during the, Avelut is suspended during the Regel. So by Niduyav, is it suspended or not during the Regel? Tosafot already asked, wait a minute, why would you think otherwise? You know, by the Avelut Yachid, at least you have an Assay that comes along and maybe there's competition here. By Nidui, there's barely an Assay. I mean, it's like, Ezra instituted that it be this way. So why is it that you would even think that Nidui should override the Regel? There should be no reason. So first of all, he says that we know that Nidui overrides even Doraita because you're allowed to curse somebody. You're not allowed to curse somebody generally. Yet, but Nidui, you're allowed to curse them. So that shows you that Nidui has the power to override Doraita. Number two, which I think is the more important answer is, Kevin Shavar al Divrei Dayanim, Arish Kana Sei Derabim. Person who violates the word of the Chachamim of the judges, he is now against the system. And when he's undermining the system, it becomes an Asei Derabim to punish that individual, to excommunicate that individual for the system itself. Because we allow people to abrogate the word of the Dayanim, to not keep what the Dayanim say, he's going to undermine the whole system. So the whole system is at risk if we allow this guy to go on. Therefore, there's an Asei Derabim to keep him as a Nidui, and that's the question of the Gemara here. That versus of the Asei of the Rego, what's the din? Samar Rav Yosef, Tashma. Danim dinin efashot, the dinim makot, the dinim emonot. You're allowed to adjudicate these cases on Chol HaMoed. Below Tzayit Dino, if he doesn't listen to the outcome, to the Psak Halocha, Misham Tinalai. Or you put him into Nidui. Pretty straightforward. You put him into Nidui on Chol HaMoed. Visak Adat Chanyin Oeg Nidui HaBeregel. If you say that there's no Nidui on Regel, Mishumat Va'atem Ikarati Regel V'Dochilei. Someone's already in Nidui. The Regel comes and overrides it. Hashtem Misham Tinalai Anon. Then why would we put him into Nidui on the Regel if it's going to have no effect? It doesn't work. Samuel Abai, Talmud Abai says back to Rav Yosef, he says, maybe they're just looking into the din. They're not giving up psak halacha. They're just looking at the evidence of the case during Chol HaMoed. If that's not the case, you said over here, you're going to tell me they put him to death on Chol HaMoed? That's going to ruin their Simchat Yom Tov. Not the guy who's getting put to death, obviously, but the Dayanim themselves. Why? Sanhedrin that puts someone to death has to fast on the day that they execute the individual. You're not allowed to eat when there's dam at risk. Meaning that's, this is a lav shibiklalot, that we dash many things from it, including you're not allowed to eat before you daven. Also here, that lo tochlu al adam means they can't eat when there's an execution going on. So that means they're going to have to suspend their eating on that day. It means it's going to ruin their simcha de yom tov. So they can't do this. So ela le'yunune bedine. So that's the answer. The answer is that, what are they doing here? They're not giving up psak halacha. They're not executing them. They're simply looking into the case. Hachnami so too in le'yunune bedine. We're talking about the shamto excommunicating him. They're not really excommunicating him. They're looking into it. They will excommunicate him after Chol HaMoed if he doesn't listen to what they're going to say. That means you can end up causing what's called Inui Adin. Inui Adin is that you're afflicting the person who's waiting for an outcome over here. As Tosafot points out here, it's not so simple, Inui Adin. Inui Adin is usually when you have psaked in. You came to a conclusion, you have psaked in, and you don't carry out the execution, you don't carry out the din. You leave the person suspended after the psak halacha, don't take care of it. So here, this is a different version of Inui Adin. Here, they didn't give up psak halacha. They just discussed the issues, and then they didn't come to a conclusion. They called that Inui Adin as well. So Tosafot says that's because if you listen to all the testimony, even though it's written down, if you don't deal with it right away, you start to forget it, and then you have to redo it, and it becomes Inui Adin because of that. So Ato Mitzafro, Umiayne Bidine, Vayel Vachle. So he says, this is what Rabbi Yosef says. Abai, I think you're wrong. I know what, this could actually be executions. You know why? They come in the morning, and they check into the case. Then they go and eat and drink. And they have their simchas yom tov, kule yoma. Right before sunset they come, they give the psak halacha, and they execute him right then. So they're able to have their simchas yom tov all day. Then right before sunset, they fast, they kill him, and then at sunset it's over, everything's done. So there's no suspension. So Amar Abaye, so then Abaye, that's Rabbi Yosef's response, and now we don't have any proof anymore. So Amar Abaye Tashma, our Mishnah says that a Chacham, but the Chachamim allowed him. They took away his excommunication. Well, why would they need to take away his excommunication if it was automatically suspended on the regel? Then there'd be no need to take it away. He wouldn't be a Menudeh. Some Rava Miktani Shitiru Chachamim. Doesn't say that the Chachamim were Matir. Shitiru Lo Chachamim. It's speaking about a specific individual. It's not talking about excommunicated people in general that the Chachamim are Matir on the regel. Rather, it's this individual, the Chachamim are Matir. Why? Azul Paisi the Baldine. This individual took away the reason for his excommunication. He went and he appeased the other litigant in the case, and he did whatever the Dayanim said. And he comes before the Rabbanan and either matir him. It's not because automatically all Niduyim are matir, the Chachamim are matir on the regel. No. This specific individual, because he changed the circumstances, therefore we're matir him on the regel. So there's no proof from here that you are matir automatically on the regel. Here, this individual gets a heter. Implied from that is also the opposite, which is that if you are matir him on the regel, that proves that what? He still was in Nidui during the regel. And it seems like the Nidui does apply during the regel. Mitzora, Maushanig, Tzarato, Beregel. So now we dealt with Avel. Now we're dealing with Nidui. And now we're going to deal with Mitzora. So with Avel, we said it's suspended by the regel. Nidui is not suspended by the regel, it seems. Now, what about Tzarat? Right, remember, we talked about the fact that you don't see Nigaim on Chol HaMoed or on the Yom Tov. We wait till after the Yom Tov because it's going to ruin this guy's Yom Tov. So we wait till afterwards. What happens if a person is already at Tzarat? He's a Mitzora coming into Yom Tov. What's his din? Am Rabbi Tashma, V'nazir V'mitzora, Ole Mitumato L'Tarato. Habi Meitamato Nahig. That means that only because he became Tahor on the regal do we allow him to cut his hair. But if he was Bituma, he would remain Bituma. It says, Lo Mi Bai Kamar, Lo Mi Bai Bi Meitumato D'Lo Nahig. Now, during his Yimei Tuma, for sure he's suspended. He doesn't have anything because the regel overrides it. But when it comes to the regel, maybe we would not allow someone who becomes Tahor to cut their hair on Chol HaMoed because maybe he'll leave over his karbonot. Kamash Malon, then we don't make such a gezeirah. Why would he leave over his karbonot? So Rashi over here says the reason is that we're worried is that on Chol HaMoed he's allowed to bring his karbonot. But he's not allowed to bring his karbonot on Yom Tov. So what we're afraid of is if he becomes Tahor on Chol HaMoed, instead of doing his Korbanot on Chol HaMoed, he's going to do it on Yom Tov Acharon. Yom Tov Acharon, you're not allowed to, because those are the Korbanot of Yachid, and they're not Doche Yom Tov. You're allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed, but not on Yom Tov. So Shem Yishai Korbanot Avs, we're afraid he's going to leave over his Korbanot and do it on Yom Tov, which is not allowed. That's the way Rashi explains it here. Most of the other Rishonim reject that and say, what do you mean? Nobody's going to let him bring his Korbanot on Yom Tov, because everybody knows you're not allowed to bring korbanot yachid. The Kohanim are there. They're not going to let him bring his korbanot. It's not up to the individual to do this. So that's not Shem Yishai Korbanot. But rather, what we're afraid of is that this person will wait until Chol HaMoed and be mikavin to do it on Chol HaMoed itself, which is that even though he's oleh mitumato l'taroto prior to Yom Tov, he's going to wait until Chol HaMoed to bring his korbanot. Why? Because then he gets the benefit, a double benefit. He'll bring his shlamim, he'll bring his korbanot on Yom Tov, he'll be yotzei shami simcha and his olot by using the korbanot of his tara, whether it's from the nazir, whether it's from the mitzora, and then he'll double up. Basically, he'll get a bonus by doing that. So Shem Yishai Korbanot Av, he said he's going to leave it over until Yom Tov. So if we allow him to shave, if we don't allow him to shave, what they're going to say is you can't shave on Yom Tov. If you can't shave on Yom Tov, then he's not going to bring his korbanot on Chol HaMoed because he can't shave then. So if we force him to shave before, he usually brings his korbanot when he shaves. So we say he can't shave on Chol HaMoed, he has to shave before, and that's going to force him to bring his korbanot before, and he won't leave them over to Chol HaMoed. So then the Gemara says, Kamash Man, we don't make such a gezeira. Amar Rava, Tashma. V'hatzarua, the rabot Kohen Gadol. Tzarua says that a Kohen Gadol does have a din of Tzarat. V'hakohen Gadol chol shana k'regel u'kulei amadami. A Kohen Gadol the rest of the year is like a regel for everybody, because a Kohen Gadol is like he has a din of a regel all year round. It's not. Kohen Gadol makriv onein, veino ochel. Kohen Gadol is an onein, continues to work in the Mikdash. Why? Because for him, it's a regel. It's as if it's a regel. His aninut is suspended. He brings korbanot. He doesn't eat, but he does bring korbanot. Shmamina. So from there you see, noeget, sarat, beregel, shmamina. The fact that a Kohen Gadol can get sarat
shows you that even on the regel, Tzurat applies, because for Kohen Gadol, he is Veregel Kol HaShana Kula. If he's Veregel Kol HaShana Kula, and he can get Tzurat, there you go, there's your answer, that a Tzurat can apply to the regel. Now, Avel Asur B'Tisporet. Avel is not allowed to have his hair cut. Mid the Kamarle Rachman of Bnei Aron, because the Torah says, Bnei Aron, Roshechem Al Tifrau, your hair you may not grow out. Michlal de Kuleyam Asur. From there you would conclude that everybody else does not allow to is allowed to let the hair grow out, or is not allowed to cut the hair. Merudim u'mitzuraim mayim b'tisporet. Someone is excommunicated or is a mitzora. What's their din with regards to getting their hair cut? Tashma, we have an answer. By the way, nothing menuda mitzora have nothing to do with each other. The only reason the Gemara brings the connection or the question together is because the answer comes together, which is from Tashma merudim u'mitzuraim asur nesaper l'chabes. That a mitzora and a menudeh are not allowed to get the haircut and not allowed to launder. So here's our answer. Avel, mitzora, and menudeh cannot cut their hair. It's all of them have that same din. Now, both Rashi and Tosafot ask over here, why do you need the Gemara to tell you this by a mitzora? By a mitzora, the Pasuk says, Rosho yefarua. His hair will be disheveled. He has to let it grow out. Of course he can't get his hair cut. So Gemara, both of them answer is that the Gemara upcoming has a different drasha with Rosho Yefarua. It might have to do with tefillin. There are other drashot that say that it's not necessarily applying to hair. And therefore the Gemara here brings that. According to those that say Rosho Yefarua is not referring to hair, according to them, that's what the Gemara is discussing. Is there a restriction against cutting the hair? And the answer is, yes, there is such a restriction. Okay, we'll stop over here.